Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. It is the week of New Year's. That means tons of bowl games. So we're going to discuss college football here on a Monday, so a little earlier than we normally do. But it's a dark day before the games get cranked up on Tuesday, so we wanted to get you this week's action and handicap and some analysis here. Matt Eumanns of Vegas Stats and Information Network is going to join me. You obviously know his work from here on the pod, also some ESPN.com chalk section stuff. And by the way, we are posting our picks there and updating it throughout the bowl season, so please go check it out. I'm on there. Preston's on there. A bunch of us are on there. So a lot of picks on there. And again, updated as we learn more about the players opting out and all the moving parts that are inherent in any bowl season, but particularly this year with the COVID variable as well. So we're going to start with the national semifinal game. Some interesting discussion there, but we're going to talk about all the bowl bets we like. Usually we get different voices. It'll just be Matt and I, but I'll incorporate a lot of the analysis I've heard from my sources, so to speak. And then that'll all be condensed into this podcast. And then Wednesday, not Thursday, we'll be doing the NFL podcast going into week 17, obviously the great unknown of week 17, but we'll sort it all out and maybe even look into some futures. We've had a change in the MVP betting favorite. Aaron Rodgers is now the favorite ahead of Patrick Mahomes with one more regular season to go and the maybe bankroll bonanza. We'll see what happens tonight with the Buffalo Bills and Monday night, that lineup to 7.5. But this is all college football with Matt straight ahead. And before we get into today's episode, I want to tell everyone about a special ESPN podcast, 30 for 30 podcast. Presents March 11th, 2020, a standalone audio documentary that tells the story of the day the NBA shutdown and the pandemic became real for many Americans. As told by those who lived the events of that day and built entirely with archival and exclusive interviews, including Rudy Gobert and Dr. Anthony Fauci. March 11th, 2020 will tell the story of a day that started in one reality and ended in a new one. 30 for 30 podcast presents March 11th, 2020. Subscribe and listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
All right, time to bring in a friend of the podcast. You've heard him here often talking college hoops, college football. So with such a busy week with football, we might as well get him back on to break down some bowl games. Matt Eumanns, welcome back, my friend.
Hey, thanks. Great to be back on. Off to a pretty good start to the bowl season, and hopefully that continues.
Yeah, we didn't do a full college football pod last week, but I did expand on a couple picks last week at the beginning of the NFL pod, but the big one was Liberty and got the outright win. But it was a little hairy. Matt, I received a text message from you that said, if they lose by 8 in triple overtime, I am never betting again.
I was never going to bet college football again. you know, some of these coaches are so clueless. It drives you crazy. And I'm not just talking about college football. It's the NFL, too. You know, we've seen it with so many guys. I don't even want to start naming names. We all know who the biggest bozos are out there. But there are so many coaches that just don't know how to handle game management situations. It drives you crazy. Yeah, I had Liberty in that game. And I'm not going to rehash the whole deal. We know what happened. But if it was setting up, Doug, if that field goal had not been blocked, you could see it setting up to where you could possibly lose that game by 8 in triple overtime. And that was going to be an all-time bad beat if it happened that way.
And that's something that happened many years ago with USC and Stanford. It was Stanford catching 7.5, led the whole game, basically, covering the entire game, and then loses by 8 in triple overtime because the Trojans get the possession first and score and get the two-point conversion. So that was an all-timer. But let's turn the page. We'll start with the semifinals games and clearly some big spreads. I want to talk Notre Dame-Alabama because you and I have been kind of advocates of this Irish team most of the season and obviously got undressed by Clemson. Just things did not go well, but I kind of like them plus the points here. I understand the line move. I agree with it. It's come down a little bit, but there's mostly 20s out there. I would have to grab the 20 with Notre Dame.
Yeah, that's the way I'm looking too, but I'm not going to grab the 20. I'm going to wait to see if this gets bet up to 21. You know, we talked about a similar situation with the Northwestern Ohio State game in the Big Ten championship, and I was waiting for that number to go up. and it never did. And then when it started to drop, you had to grab the 20 with Northwestern because obviously it was going the other way. I don't think this number is going to go the other way. I think there are going to be so many Bama bettors out there that you could see this go to 21. And at that point, that's where I'll look to bet Notre Dame. If I'm wrong and it starts to drop, then I'll go ahead and grab the 20 here. Notre Dame can't match Alabama's big playability. We know that. So Ian Book, senior quarterback, he's got to play efficiently. He's 30-4 as Notre Dame's starting quarterback. He's the only Power 5 quarterback with at least 240 pass attempts and two or fewer interceptions this season. He was not that sharp against Clemson. Missed on a fourth down pass early in the game. The Irish just made some mistakes that you can't make in a situation like that against the Tigers. You've got to capitalize on every opportunity, and Notre Dame did not do that. I thought they got pushed around a little bit on the offensive line, which was surprising. I think Notre Dame will make a much better showing in this game against Alabama. I think they're going to be sharper. I expect the Irish to play a little bit better and hang within this number. I'm not gonna say Notre Dame's going to have a shot to win this game, but I think it's going to be something like a 13, 14, 17-point win, maybe, 10 to 17 points. Alabama wins this game. Again, Notre Dame is not going to be completely outclassed. Everybody's going to talk about the 2012 game. It was 35-0 right off the bat. I really thought Alabama could have scored 70 in that game. The final was 42-14. Saban let off the gas. Alabama could have named the score 8 years ago when these teams met. That's not going to be the case this time. I expect the Irish to be able to, move the ball, control the clock. They can get Kyren Williams to be productive in the running game. Notre Dame's got a chance to hang in this, make a game of it. So, yeah, I'll take the points with the Irish. But, again, let's wait and see if the Bama bettors are going to bet up this number a little bit. No reason to run to the window and jump on the 20 just yet.
Let's not forget how Florida botched several game situations, especially at the end of the first half. If you check my Twitter feed, I just railed into Dan Mullen. Even a week later, I was still doing it. But most importantly, this defense can give up points to a skilled offense, and I think that's what we're going to see here. And let's not forget, Saban knows there's another game when he has a comfortable lead a week later and does not want injuries. He's already lost Waddle, other injuries throughout the year. And if we remember a couple years ago with a similar point spread against Oklahoma, Bama was rolling early, and Sooners backdoor cover. Now, they had Kyler Murray in an explosive offense, an up-tempo offense, but Saban definitely bled the clock in the fourth quarter with a line like this. That is part of the handicap. And so I do think we could even get a backdoor cover and just a foot off the gas kind of thing. And I will say this, Matt. I don't think Notre Dame's going to win. I don't. Okay. But there's some 35-1 out there to win it all. And as you know, if the power rating will adjust if Notre Dame does somehow pull off an upset. And so they're not going to be as big of underdogs against Clemson, depending on how Clemson looks, if Clemson advances. So I actually think if there are fans out there, taking a 30 or 35-1 flyer is actually could be perceived as value. It's different than the rollover of the money lines, is my point.
Right. I'm not going to jump on that 35-1, but I'm not going to argue against anybody who wants to. If you want to take that, go ahead. I don't think the Irish can pull off the win here, but I do think they can be competitive. And like you said, I never like to bank on the backdoor, but that's a possibility because Nick Saban, if he gets a big lead, is going to know, hey, we got Clemson most likely. If Clemson advances, we've got Clemson or Ohio State up next. And he can sit on a lead. He's done it before. So I think that's certainly a possibility. But again, Notre Dame plus the 20 or 21 would be the way I would go.
All right, let's go to that other semifinal game. We both kind of projecting Clemson to win. I will say this. In the past years, we've seen about 4 weeks of time between the conference title game and then the national semifinal game. Now, with about 2 weeks between these, the COVID concerns or issues that surfaced heading into the Big Ten title game could still be an issue. Like, we don't know if the Buckeyes will be at full strength. That is a concern of mine. It's tough not to like Clemson here just because Ohio State has only looked great against some really bad competition. But the Tigers also have their flaws, and we've seen them at times this year. I'm not running to the window to lay the 7.5 either.
Yeah, I'm conflicted on this game because I really don't like the way Justin Fields played in the Big Ten championship game, and I really haven't liked the way he's played against good defenses this season. And that's going to be something that's talked about a lot before the NFL draft in the spring. But he was 12 for 27, 114 yards, two interceptions against Northwestern. Ohio State rallied to win that game 22-10, but Trey Sermon ran for 331 yards. He's not going to do that against the Clemson defense. So Fields is going to have to be a lot better. If you go back to last season when these teams hooked up in the playoff semifinal, Ohio State should have won that game.
Yes.
They were up 16-0. They had some, you know, a couple unlucky breaks, some couple bad calls went against them. Clemson comes back to win 29-23. Fields threw a pick in the end zone with 37 seconds left on a miscommunication with wide receiver. I thought Ohio State outplayed Clemson. Trevor Lawrence made a couple big plays, obviously, in that game.
Yeah, the huge run, namely.
Yeah. Ohio State's pass defense has been a real weakness this season. And it's not like they've been facing great quarterbacks on the other side. Like you said, Ohio State's played six games against a relatively weak schedule. They haven't played any big-time quarterbacks. So I've got some real concerns. I would like to take the dog here, but I'm not sure I can get there with Ohio State. I haven't seen enough, Doug, to make me think this Ohio State team is as good as some of the Buckeye teams we've seen over the past, you know, five, six, 7 years. So I'm off this game as of right now. Maybe I'll change my mind before kickoff, but right now I don't have a play on this yet.
Yeah, I mean, both things can be true. The Buckeyes should have won last year, but they could also, like, not necessarily be the better team here. And that's something that might affect some recreational bettors, just kind of having that shoulda, woulda, coulda last year, you know, getting 7.5 this year. They're really mutually exclusive discussions. One thing I want to ask you, now it's a high total, so there's no value in essence in the conventional thinking, but would you entertain a Clemson teaser or something along those lines just to get the W?
I would not tease it. I think if you like Clemson to get the W, just bet them on the money line.
Yeah.
I don't really see anything I would want to tease it with at this point. Maybe if you really like Indiana against Ole Miss, maybe you could do something like that. But
or an NFL game, maybe the playoff game early, get a Monday line or something like that.
I've hit teasers in the NFL the last 2 weeks, but I don't play many teasers, and I don't think I played one in college football the entire season. So I can't really recommend that, but I think Clemson wins this game. I'm just, like you said, I haven't bet it yet. So,
yeah, I'm good for about one or two teasers. This year, I think I did three teasers in college football, like a Northwestern game. You know, these low totals, Northwestern, Iowa, I definitely tease, things like that. Mm-hmm. All right, so the week gets going with some interesting bowl games. It's tough, man. I've been faring pretty well despite the added layer of COVID and all that with this year's bowl games. We already have the opt-out unknowns going into any bowl season the last couple of years. Now we have the COVID, but somehow I've picked the right games. You want to talk about a couple games. Colorado laying 9.5 to Texas here. Now the Buffs stormed out of the gates this year against UCLA. Many kind of wanted to knock the Bruins, but then the Buffs end up being a pretty decent team. So what do you make of this line? Nearly double digits for Colorado.
If Colorado were laying 9.5, like you said, I wouldn't be betting it.
I jumped off.
Texas. That's okay. I actually took 12 with Colorado in this game. I think, you know, I would still recommend taking 9.5, but it would be a smaller bet. I kind of anticipated this line was going to drop, Doug, because, you know, it's old school bowl game handicapping. Which team's going to be motivated, blah, blah, blah. We talk about this stuff every year, but it's Texas looks like a classic case of an unfocused bowl favorite. You know, Tom Herman was on the hot seat. He would be out if Urban Meyer wanted to unretire. And reports surfaced that Herman had talked to South Carolina about its coaching vacancy, and that he wanted out. He wants to find a new job. Well, he jumps on the bowl game phone call last week and tells the media that his players are, quote, extremely excited to be playing in this bowl. That's BS. The truth is five team captains have opted out to start preparing for the NFL draft. This is the second year in a row the Longhorns have been in the Alamo Bowl. You know, players don't get fired up to go play in the same minor bowl two seasons in a row. The one guy who will be fired up is Sam Ellinger, senior quarterback. I love Ellinger. He's a gamer. Sammy the Bull, 25 touchdown passes, 5 interceptions. He is the motor in that offense, throwing it and running it, and he always gives a great effort. Tom Herman, 3-0 in bowls. I was on the Longhorns last year. They were 7-point dogs in this game, and they whipped Utah 38-10. The Utes didn't want to be in that bowl last year. I think the Longhorns are in that same situation this year. Carl Durrell, first season at Colorado. The Buffaloes have been a surprise team in the Pac-12. They beat UCLA, Stanford, San Diego State. If you look at this team on paper, you say, wow, I'm not too impressed. But they find ways to get it done. I wish they got a little bit better quarterback play, but I think they can run the ball here and take advantage of a Texas team that should be emotionally flat for this game. And that's the handicap, essentially. So I think Colorado, the Buffaloes should be live dogs here.
Yeah, no, it's certainly interesting to grab that many points. I mean, I know you like Ellinger, and to go against him is against your normal ways, but getting, like you said, in your case, double digits here. I feel like Wisconsin's been one of the more overrated teams this year, been pretty disappointed since the opening beatdown of Illinois. I don't love Wake, but I feel like I have to grab a touchdown here with Wake.
That would be the only way I could go. You know, I've been fading Wisconsin quite a few times against Northwestern, against Indiana. I don't think this Badgers team is anywhere near the level it's been for the past 10 or 15 years. You don't have the workhorse running back. Graham Mertz is a freshman quarterback who threw 5 touchdowns against Illinois, but that's a terrible Illinois defense, and everybody went crazy. The best quarterback Wisconsin's had since Russell Wilson, blah, blah, blah. I just don't think – I don't think a whole lot of this Wisconsin team. And you could see it really in the Iowa game. I'm not sure if you watched that towards the end of the year. Wisconsin just can't move the ball.
Yeah, the punt fest.
That was just a sick game to watch. I don't have a play on this game, but I'm not going to bet Wisconsin.
All right, another game on Wednesday. Florida-Oklahoma, no Kyle Pitts, and that is huge for the Gators. On top of that, you mentioned it with Texas and, you know, desire to be in this bowl game. Look, Oklahoma should be a good enough opponent to get the Gators up, but – they were so close in the SEC title game. You have to wonder if they're going to show up, and we've seen a line move here. Now, some shops have the Sooners even favored. They were +3 as recently as last night.
Yeah, I've got Oklahoma +3, and I was disappointed right before we came on to talk about this game on the podcast. I was like, yeah, do I still want to recommend it? Because now you got Sooners +1, or like you said, it's the line's definitely moving the other way. But the Gators had – 2 wide receivers opt out, Grimes and Tony, in addition to Kyle Pitts, who's a stud, who's going to be, next time you see him, will be in the NFL. Kyle Trask is outstanding. I have a ton of respect for him as a quarterback. But, you know, when you're missing your top targets like that, it's going to make a difference. And I think the key here is Florida put everything it had, fired the Gators probably fired every bullet they had at Alabama, and came up short, 52-46. That was a wild SEC championship shootout. That was their Super Bowl, right? They're coming off the LSU loss where they drop a home game as a 23-point favorite. They got a chance to redeem themselves. They put a scare into Bama, and now they go to the Cotton Bowl for a game that's basically meaningless. But it does mean something to the Sooners because they're going to be national title contenders going into next season. They'll be one of the favorites. Spencer Rattler returning as quarterback. They held off Iowa State in a pretty good Big 12 title game. And I think Lincoln Riley is going to have his team up. I'm not sure Dan Mullen's going to be able to get his team up for this game. And with the defections and the opt-outs, I think you have to look at the Oklahoma side.
I do too. You know, I grabbed the +3 as well. I'm a little disappointed with the line move, but that's okay. I think Oklahoma gets the win. And the Cotton Bowl is home game in a lot of ways for OU. So that's another element to that. And I think there's going to be fans, if I'm not mistaken, some crowd there. And I would imagine it's going to be all Sooners. Now, how loud that is and all that, who knows, right? It's a big stadium. It's not full, but I don't think many Florida fans are going to travel. Now, you mentioned the Alamo Dome with Texas last year. A couple years ago, you were also fading Georgia, a team that did not want to be there, and Texas got the outright win as a double-digit dog. How are you handicapping the Bulldogs here, laying 7 with Cincinnati?
Well, you have a good memory.
I do.
Fading Georgia in that game would be fading Georgia in this one, too. This kind of reminds me of a Central Florida Peach Bowl, January 1st, 2018. And UCF went into the game 12-0 and took down Auburn 34-27. UCF was a 10-point dog in that game. I think this is very similar because Cincinnati, the Cincinnati team, disrespected by the committee, similar to UCF, facing an SEC opponent that's probably being given a little bit too much credit by the odds makers. And Luke Fickle, I think, is a smarter coach and a better game manager than Kirby Smart. He's going to have his team up. I think he's got an advantage over Smart here, too, because his team's going to be easily motivated to play and prove a point against an SEC opponent. Bearcats are 9-0. They barely got by Tulsa in the AAC championship game. That was kind of a weird game with poor weather that night. I'm going to say Desmond Ridder, you know, he'll make a mistake from time to time, but he's a pretty high-level playmaker as a dual-threat quarterback. The Bearcats' strength is their defense. They're ranked number 7 in the nation in scoring. They allow 16 points a game. Now, you're going to look at the Georgia side and say USC transfer JT Daniels has a hot hand. In the past 3 games, he passed for 839 yards, 9 touchdowns with 1 interception. But you always have to look at the opposition. He took apart weak defenses, Mississippi State, Missouri, South Carolina. Come on, that's not Cincinnati. Cincinnati D is on a different level. I think Luke Fickle is going to have his team ready to play. On the flip side, Kirby Smart's got a tough motivational job here. He's got senior linebacker Monty Rice and several other guys opting out to prepare for the NFL. And those opt-outs are never a good thing at this time. And I think that's going to affect Georgia in this game. I took 7.5 with Cincinnati. That was a high point in the line. I didn't think it was going to go any higher. I made this number 4, 3.5, 4, right in that range. Luke Fickle, 31-5 straight up in past 3 seasons, including 2 bowl wins. I really think the Bearcats are live dogs here, especially if the Bulldogs are disinterested, and I think they will be with all the opt-outs.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think JT Daniels, I don't think so. I know he's a better quarterback. The question is just how much of a better quarterback, and you alluded to it because, yes, the competition was weak, but I don't think the original one, his name's Stenson or whatever his name is, I forget already.
Justin Bennett, yeah.
So much for my good memory. He was terrible. I'm sorry. Now, give him credit. Young guy, put in a tough situation, all that, and he did fine. But JT Daniels, much more polished. Comes with the pedigree, but how good is he? That is the question. So good points across the board. Sounds like you and I are opposite on this one bowl game on January 2nd. Some of these bowl games get lost a little bit. I like that. Ole Miss and Indiana, Hoosiers laying over a touchdown, 7.5 or 8. I think the Rebels showed me something in that last game. I know they have a horrific defense, and they'll own it too, but I do like Lane Kiffin. I think the guys get up for this game. I like the plus points here.
Well, I laid 6.5 with Indiana. I have noticed that number going up, so I'm not going to say bet it at over a touchdown because at 6.5, I felt like there was a little bit of value on the Hoosiers. I'm not gonna say lay 7.5. Elijah Moore, a receiver for Ole Miss, and Kenny Yeboah, tight end, they've obviously opted out, and that's going to make a difference. This Ole Miss defense is terrible. Indiana's got the far superior defense, and I like Tom Allen. I think he's going to do a pretty good motivational job on this Indiana team, Doug. The last time Indiana won a bowl game was 1991. Tom Allen's trying to check off all the things the Hoosiers have not accomplished in the past several decades, and winning a bowl game is one of them. I think just the fact that Indiana's defense is so much better than Ole Miss is going to put me on a rare bowl favorite. I've actually only played one bowl favorite so far, and that was Buffalo. I was lucky to get the win in that one. I played 2 dogs, Hawaii and Liberty, and Indiana and Clemson are the only other favorites I really like on the board. And I'm a little bit hesitant. I was even a little bit hesitant to lay the 6.5, but I thought that was the best number we were going to see out there. I'm a little surprised to see it go to 7.5 as of right now, but Mississippi is really poor defensively, and I think the Hoosiers can run the ball up and down the field on them. Indiana's got some stud running backs, and I think they can take kind of control the tempo of this game. And I'm going to bet on Tom Allen instead of Lane Kiffin here.
Yeah. Can't fault you for wanting to back Tom Allen. So who do you think wins it all? By the way, we touched on Clemson and Alabama, both in our thoughts of advancing. Do you have a advanced pick on that game? What do you think the line will be?
I think it's going to be Bama minus
4.5,
maybe Bama minus 5 or 6. And I think Bama over Clemson. You know, I'm really actually, it gets kind of old, doesn't it? Not to fault Nick Saban or Dabo Swinney or, you know, two elite teams, but I get tired of talking about Alabama and Clemson every year. You know, and that's the great thing about the bowl season is you got all these other games that you can bet on. I mean, I was as interested in the Hawaii-Houston game as any other game on the bowl schedule. I thought I was really fired up for the Hawaii-Houston game last week New Mexico Bowl in Frisco, Texas. I cared about that as much as I do Ohio State-Clemson. That's one of the great things about the bowl season when you bet on these games. You know, I have a bigger bet on some of the minor bowls than I will on the two playoff games.
No, I'm right there with you. Obviously, we always joke on the show, all tickets cash the same, but it's not just those two. It's Ohio State has won 6 of the last 7 Big Ten titles. Oklahoma has won 6 straight Big 12 titles, and then Clemson's won 6 straight. And if not for Bama, it's the other couple dominant SEC teams, and then they go on to win. So it's basically been the same handful of teams. And it's getting a little annoying, but that's the recruiting wars. Hopefully, somebody from out west, maybe USC gets back into it if they get rid of Clay Helton. Who knows what materializes on that front, or maybe Texas even re-enters the discussion as they did at the end of the 2000s. But it is getting annoying. I'm something is off with this Clemson team, but I don't think Bama's as potent as we've seen in years past. I'm curious to see how that game plays out. I probably, as of now, don't have an opinion. A lot will depend on how they look in the semifinals games. I think seeing how the Tigers look against Ohio State will give us a good barometer. We got a glimpse of it with Notre Dame, but you know they also lost it at South Bend earlier in the year without Lawrence. We'll know a lot more about, I think, the Tigers after this game coming up. I think we know who Bama is, so I'm interested to see how they look.
Hey, by the way, while we're talking about them, looking at the screen, I'm seeing the 20s start to turn into 19s. So maybe I'm going to have to grab the 20 with Notre Dame today.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, public money does move the semifinals and the finals. Like we talked about it last year with LSU. I mean, the sharps or at least the math model guys loved the double digits with Oklahoma, and the line moved up in 12 all the way up to 15. Now it came back. If you guys remember, there was a tragic plane crash involving a family member of one of the assistants on LSU. So the line kind of moved down on game day. But before that, it went from 12 because the public couldn't get enough of the Tigers, right? They bet them all year and they were rewarding. So the math guys were loving the Sooners at that point. It'll be interesting to see if the public continues to influence the semifinals, because to your point, they love Bama, but I would imagine some sharp money and even the math money will be on the Irish.
Right.
All right, my man. Good stuff as always. Really appreciate your taking the time. I know you're super busy this time of year, so thanks for the insight.
You bet, man, and good luck with your NBA betting.
Thank you. We're off and running.
How do you like them apps?
And thanks to Matt Eumanns, who, yes, he dropped the line of the NBA. It is off and running. We're going to have some content on ESPN.com pretty soon. We're figuring out the schedule once we get through the bowl season about how to post some picks a couple days a week on that. We obviously do a ton of NBA content on Daily Wager. We did well with the Christmas Day games. I was big on the Bucks over the lowly Warriors, although Jordan Poole hit the buzzer beater last night, or yesterday afternoon, I should say, and the Warriors finally get a scratch in the win column. But the NBA is crazy right now, and you know, the Lakers, it's sat AD. We'll see what happens tonight with Portland in town. But we're going to have a lot of coverage of that here on the podcast as well. Again, got to get through bowl week. We'll probably do another college football component to the pods next week. And then we have playoff style with the NFL. We made it through the season just about. We got week 17 here. And we'll break that down on Wednesday with an analyst. And also Mr. Executive Director John Murray will join us to talk about how the book handles all the moving parts of week 17, although there doesn't seem to be a ton of confusion this year. Like, we know the games, we know the teams that need something, and coaches are typically more transparent with who they're going to play and whatnot. Like, we know Heineke starting for Washington and after Dwayne Haskins was benched. So we'll do that Wednesday. Thanks so much. All that fun stuff of subscribing, rating, and reviewing. And we'll hopefully have some good winners here on the College Football Podcast, and we'll reconnect on Wednesday with the NFL.